The Courage to Lead, Episode 24.
You're listening to the IB4E Coaching Podcast.
Brought to you by IB4E Coaching, business coaching for executives, entrepreneurs, and small business professionals. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com.
Hey, Coach Harlan here. Welcome back to the podcast. Hope you guys are having a great week. I'm having a good week and it's about to get better because I get to introduce you to a friend of mine and an entrepreneur. You're going to be amazed at this guy's background. Let me introduce you to Glenn Gould. Glenn began his career at age 11 working for a catering company more years ago than he would like to admit. At 13, he took his first real job at Dairy Queen and progressed to night manager at Taco Tico at age 15. Following his dream of being a professional golfer, Glenn worked at world-class resorts, including the Tournament Players Club at Sawgrass, where he learned firsthand how to treat customers. It was during his time as a golf professional that Glenn began to truly study successful people and organizations with the intention of learning what they do, how they do it, and replicating their results. Using what he learned about how successful people connect, Glenn became the president of the Punta Gorda, Florida Chamber of Commerce, and later the director of small to mid-sized business at Metro Atlanta Chamber. He concluded his chamber career at the Noonan Coweta Chamber of Commerce, the 2015 Small Chamber of the Year Award winner. He started four multimillion-dollar enterprises from the ground up and is a partner in Dry Cleaning Connection with his wife Tammy and sons Grant and Carson. He's authored four books, including Meet Me at Starbucks and 101 Networking Nuggets. He's also failed more times than most people even try, learning more from his failures than from his successes. Today, Glenn inspires audiences to achieve more through entertaining and thought-provoking talks that include role-playing, interaction, and sometimes just plain fun. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harlan. Great to be here.
It's good to have you on, man. I appreciate it. I was a guest on your guys' podcast.
That's right.
A couple months back and had a great time doing that, and I knew I wanted to have you on here. And I'm glad you're available to talk to us. So I want to get into this more. I want to learn about how you got started, what all you learned as a golf professional. I didn't realize you're a golf professional. I want to learn what you learned about that. And the multi-million-dollar companies you've started. So we're going to get into all that. But before we get started, I do have 10 questions that I like to ask each one of my guests. These are the questions that were made popular on the TV show Inside the Actor's Studio, where the host James Lipton asks these questions of his guests. So if you're ready, 10 questions. Ready. Question number one, Glenn, what is your favorite word?
Adventure.
Nice. What is your least favorite word?
Failure.
And what turns you on?
Turns me on. Adventure.
Good. What turns you off?
Can't.
Absolutely. What sound or noise do you love?
The sound of my wife's voice.
Nice. What sound or noise do you hate?
A shirt machine breaking.
There's a story there. I know there is. What is your favorite curse word?
Rhymes with brother trucker.
Okay. Good job. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Wow. You know, I'd probably love to be a U.S. senator. I don't want to be president, but I'd like to be a U.S. senator.
Okay. Awesome. What profession would you not like to do?
President.
And finally, Glenn, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well done, my good and faithful servant.
Good job. Well done. All right. Glenn, we'll be back to talk more about your exciting career right after this. So stick with us.
Imagine having a trusted group of CEOs at your disposal. Imagine having your very own peer advisory team who could work you through the problems and questions in your business before you had to make those difficult decisions. Imagine you had a group of advisors that had your back and met for the sole purpose of making you successful in your business. What would you be able to accomplish then? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. You can have that and more when you join my Business Success Mastermind Group. Join my Business Success Mastermind Group today. Learn more at ib4e-coaching.com/mastermind.
All right, and we are back with Glenn Gould. Glenn, again, thanks for agreeing to be a guest on my podcast. So you started working at age 11.
Yeah, I did. My dad passed away. He had a fatal heart attack at the wheel and then ran into an 18-wheeler head-on in Heflin, Alabama in 1970. Wow. And I was kind of I was the youngest, but we all kind of had to pitch in and sure. figure out ways to make money. And I was fortunate enough to have a substitute school teacher who also owned a catering service, and he kind of felt sorry for us, and he hired me and my brother.
Wow. And so what did you do? Just working in the back prepping stuff or cleaning? What were you doing?
No, he put me in a tuxedo and had me bus tables.
There you go. Good job. And then Dairy Queen. I remember one of my first jobs was at a Taco Bell. I thought I was in heaven because I actually had gas money at the time.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Well, Dairy Queen was nice because all the girls came in to get ice cream. So
there you go. Yep. Good stuff. And then professional golfer. How did you get into golf?
So when my brother and I started playing golf pretty young, my dad bought us our first set of golf clubs. So he was still living at the time. And as he went into high school, my brother, he kind of fell in love with the game and dragged me along everywhere he went. And my mother would drop us off at the golf course because back then that was one of the safest places she could leave us and then go to work. I mean, we were there with a lot of, you know, well-intended people who, you know, taught us a lot about life. And there were some lessons that I shouldn't have learned about, sure. you know, the way people take advantage of you. But for the most part, good people at a golf course back then. And so we just grew up at the golf course, playing all the time at the Muni, the public golf course. Nice. And followed my brother into the professional golf business as a golf professional. There's a big difference between a golf professional and a professional golfer. You know, these professional golfers, they make money to play it. The golf professionals get money by teaching it. And the amount of money they make is substantially different.
Yes. Good stuff. So you taught golf. Do you still teach?
I haven't taught golf, and I haven't even played golf in 6 years.
Really? Too busy. You are
well.
Busy, I do
miss it. I do miss it.
Yeah. No, I tell everybody I play at golf.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not great. I'm lousy with my woods. I'm pretty good with my irons. My short game is okay. I can putt okay, but my drives are just way off. I don't understand what I'm doing wrong.
Well, it sounds to me like you've got the makings of a pretty decent game. Most people, they struggle with the short game more than they do the long. They don't recognize the problem they have with the long game because they struggle so much with the short game. So if you've kind of got that to where you've got it under control, you'd be pretty easy to fix.
Well, good. I will take you up on that.
There you go. Happy to do it.
So you grew up down in Florida? Is that true?
No, actually, I grew up in Smyrna, Georgia.
Okay, nice.
Just up on the north side of Atlanta.
Nice. So when were you down in Florida to be in the Punta Gorda?
I've been back and forth to Florida most of my adult life. I went to Chattahoochee Valley Community College on a golf scholarship, and I was number 6 on a team of 5. Okay. And so that kind of led me to go somewhere else to play. And I went down to USF in Tampa. And I spent a couple years there. And then I was in West Palm Beach at a country club. I was up in New York at a country club, back down at the Tournament Players Club at Sawgrass. And then later in life, my brother and I and our families moved down to Punta Gorda for about 9 years. Nice. And he's still down there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it down there. It's awesome.
Yep.
So were you teaching golf, but were you also like a caddy? Did you do any caddying for any of the big games?
So I caddied in one tour event for the head pro at the Standard Club at the time. Never really did much caddying. I did spend a summer caddying up on Long Island at Old Westbury Country Club and made very good money doing that. You know, the guys that that you would caddy for and the ladies too, you know, at private clubs like that, they were flush and they let you know it by being nice to you if you were nice to them. So
nice. But now to be a caddy, you have to really know the course, right?
Oh, sure.
You're helping him out there. Yeah.
Right.
Man.
It you can't, you know, you have to know pretty much not only the course, but pretty quickly the game of the player who you're caddying for and what their capabilities are and where they're going to find trouble and where they're not based upon what the course layout is.
Nice. Did you ever make a club selection that didn't work out for you?
Oh, are you kidding? All the time. I mean, even if it was the right club, if it didn't work out, it was my fault. That's how you get paid. Yes, ma'am, you're right. That was dumb. I certainly should have chosen a 9-iron. I'm sorry. My fault. You'll do better next time when you choose the club, not me. So, yeah.
Good job. And then you're working in the chamber. I think we met, at the Noonan Coweta Chamber.
Right.
Yeah. So how did you get into the chamber life?
So it was kind of by accident. I've always been one of those people that kind of volunteers, tries to get involved in the community. And I owned a dry cleaning plant with my brother down in Florida and started going to a thing called the Punta Gorda Business Alliance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, about that time, I was at a meeting. Somebody said, "Hey, listen, if you're interested in getting involved more in the chamber, just put your card in this hat." And I did. And about 6 months later, I got a call and said, "Congratulations, you've been elected to the board of the chamber." And I was like, "What?" You know, I didn't even know I was up for it. And I was on the board for about a year. And then I became vice president, which is the volunteer that was the volunteer position at the time. And then Hurricane Charlie hit. And when Hurricane Charlie hit, we didn't know it, but all the resources and FEMA and all of that, they don't come looking for business alliances. They come looking for the Chamber of Commerce. And so they never found us. They found the county chamber. Mm-hmm. And so the city of Punta Gorda, which was the county seat, you know, really got very little attention from FEMA and the other organizations outside of what everybody else got. And so the board decided we wanted to become a chamber, and we did. And then shortly after that, the executive director got cancer and passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we put out a monster.com thing for people to apply. And I decided I didn't want to be a part of the selection process. And the day before they were closing the selection, I had a friend that I was in a speaking business with. And he said, "You know, you're going to apply for that job." And I said, "No, why would I?" He goes, "Well, why wouldn't you?" He goes, "Well, I don't think that's what God wants me to do." And he said, "Well, have you asked him?" And I said, "No." He goes, "Well, you might want to ask him." So I pretty knew at this whole game of talking to God. I had been baptized a couple of months earlier, and I just went home that night and I just said, "Lord, you know, tell me if, you know, I tell you, if you know, I'm pretty dense. So here's the thing. One of the board members got to ask me to apply by 7:30 tomorrow morning. You don't want me to do it." And as fate would happen, two board members asked me to apply by 7:30. So I think that was kind of the answer.
That's a clear answer.
I applied, they said, "You know, hey, we've got 57 resumes and yours is by far the worst. Congratulations."
Yeah.
I said, "Look, you know, it doesn't matter. If God wants me to have that job, I'm going to have it." And that's the way it worked out. I mean, so that's how I got in the chamber business. And then 9 months later, we had done some pretty amazing things. And my wife's family, people getting a little older and not knowing their grandchildren. And she really wanted to move back to Atlanta. And I said, "Okay, we'll figure something out." And she found a job for me at the Metro Atlanta Chamber pretty quickly.
Nice. So what were some of your accomplishments down there at Punta Gorda?
At the Punta Gorda Chamber?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a couple of things that I was pretty proud of. We grew the chamber membership. We doubled the size of the chamber in less than 10 months. And
nice.
So that'd be one thing if we had like 50 members. But at the time, we had about 300 members. So we doubled the size of it to about 610 months. Wow. You know, obviously, in the wake of a terrible storm, there's people looking for resources. So, it you know, there were some easy things doing that. But we did some things right as well. And the program of work that I built was pretty ambitious. And we developed and started in the inaugural Punta Gorda Wine Festival. It's now the Punta Gorda Jazz and Wine Festival. And it's in its 16th year. It didn't happen this year because of COVID. But, you know, so I launched that thing. And our first head act was Spira Gyra. And I've got this cool picture of my family in the park at the end of the night. It's just us and Spira Gyra. Nobody else was left. Nice. And so it's a pretty cool memory.
Good job. And then the Metro Atlanta Chamber.
Yeah.
What role did you do for them?
So I applied for a sales job with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And when I came up to interview, they flew me up and I'm about 10 minutes into the interview. And of course, I'm presenting myself as a salesperson. And finally, Marty looked at me and said, Glenn, you know, just we're just going to be honest with you here. We really don't have any interest in you being a salesperson. And I was just kind of blown away. I was like, my gosh, well, then what am I doing here? And they said, we've had an opening for about a year for our director of small to mid-sized business, and we think you'd be great for it. And so I took the job, and basically they just gave me a canvas. They said, do what you think you will. And created a lot of interesting programs. I created a luncheon program, created a breakfast program, recreated the orientation where we had about 150 people a session come in and learn about the chamber and, you know, sell chamber memberships at that point. Created an expo program for them, did the Small Business Person of the Year program for them. Basic, you know, setting up all of those things and, just making small business relevant again in the Atlanta market, essentially, because it was really overlooked. And as it would be, you know, they got to the point where, you know, it's back in 2008, 2009, they didn't want to be hearing how great small business was doing. We were creating 100% of the jobs. I mean, if you did the math, small business created 100% of the jobs in 2009, according to the report to the president. And they didn't want me talking about stuff like that. So got a little rocky near the end, and they invited me to be successful somewhere else.
Is that when you came down to Noonan, Coweta?
It's interesting. I'd met Candace, who is the president, Candace Boothby, and John, and we had a relationship for a number of years, because this whole time that I'm working for the Punta Gorda Chamber and the Noonan Chamber, my friend Ben and I are doing training programs across the country for chambers. So we'd been presenters at the American Chamber of Commerce executives meetings and state events, you know, for several state events, and a lot of smaller chambers, and we'd, you know, go there. And so I knew a lot of folks, and Candace had asked me at one point to be her sales manager, and it just didn't quite click at that point. And then when I left the Metro Atlanta Chamber, the timing was right. She asked me to be the sales manager. And after about 6 months of driving back and forth from Cobb County, which is about a 45, 50 mile drive
on a good day,
I finally said to her, I said, look, this has been a lot of fun. I mean, it really has, but I just can't keep doing this. And we were building our dry cleaning business at the time. And she said, well, why don't you just move down here and become vice president? And so I did. And for 4 years, you know, did a pretty doggone good job. The last year I was there, that was the year that the chamber was recognized for as Chamber of the Year.
Nice. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, good stuff. So networking, I know you do a lot of networking. You believe in networking. You've even written a book. I've got your book. You gave me Million Dollar Meetings.
Right.
Tell me about that. Tell me about your experience in networking and why it's so important to business.
Well, you know, for me, I mean, I can certainly tell you why it's important for business, but it's easier just to see the example of how it's changed my life. You know, when you go into an opportunity and meet people, you just have no idea what that can lead to if you're open to the connections that might happen. And if you get a little bit of skill, learn how to present yourself and learn how to ask questions skillfully to get the information out of folks that you can help them with, it's really rewarding. I will tell you that for me, I know that my whole life changed when two things happened. Number one, when I first went to Toastmasters, just a opportunity. Never been to Toastmasters. They really try that. But then because I went to Toastmasters and I met Kathy Lehner, who is now the president of the Venice Realtor at the time, and she introduced me, she took me to a chamber event, and she asked me the question that I just would have never thought of on my own. I had been in business all off and on all my life. And I walked into this event. She said, who do you need to meet? And I don't know. I never really thought about who do you need to meet? Somebody that'll buy my stuff, right?
Yeah.
And never strategically sat down and thought to myself, okay, if I met this person, that would open up these opportunities for me. If I met that, instead of, well, if I meet that person and he's wearing a jacket, I can clean his jacket. You know, it was never explained to me the breadth of the connections you can make if you meet the right people that you can help. And by doing so, they want to help you.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Yeah. I remember there's a thing in here where you mentioned that your wife was once met somebody at a chamber event. Within 30 days, it landed a piece of business that meant over $1 million to your business.
That's true. As it's turned out, it's been more than a million because we still have the business. But my wife is not a networker by any stretch of the imagination. But what she is somebody who knows how to talk to people and knows how to make it interesting for them to talk. Exactly. And so we had an opportunity to meet a client at a luncheon. And unfortunately, it was a luncheon that I couldn't be dry cleaning guy because I was chamber guy at the time. And she met him. And got to talking to him, found out what his need was, found that we were able to, satisfy that need and then some. And just by that one connection, so it's pretty rare when you meet somebody first time and you do business, but it happens. And she was open to the idea that it could, and it did. And so now there is a backstory to that in that we had talked about if we ever meet so-and-so that, this would be an opportunity and we need to be ready for it. We need to know how we would present ourselves to be a benefit to that person. But we never expected to meet them face to face. We had kind of expected we'd meet somebody who could introduce us to somebody who might introduce us to that person and work our way in. It was just one of those fortunate things where you're at the right meeting at the right time.
Nice. But you're right. It's not about the sales part of it. It's about building those connections. It's about building the relationships with people. And a lot of times allowing them to talk about themselves, asking them questions, having them really talk about themselves, they'll walk away from the meeting thinking you were the most, important, influential person they've ever met because Absolutely. They got to talk about themselves. That's pretty important.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So in your bio too, you said you've started 4 multi-million dollar enterprises. Now you mentioned the dry cleaning that you had with your brother down in Florida.
Right.
And dry cleaning connection up here, which is huge and growing, right? What else have you done?
So we were in the retail store floor cleaning business for a while and in the janitorial supply business for a while. So we started, my brother left, he was a golf pro, left the Standard Club with the intention of building a golf course. And he really believed it. Bernie Marcus, who's the chair, was chairman of Home Depot. He was Bernie's personal golf coach. And so he really expected, and they had talked about how they would build a golf course. And so in between the time where Scott resigned and his contract was up, the real estate market kind of took a dump in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And Bernie kind of said, hey, Scotty, it's just not the right time right now. And so Scott had to figure out something to do. And one of the other members manufactured janitorial supplies and specific floor buffing pads and gave Scott an opportunity to become a distributor. And Scott connected with me and I started helping him sell the stuff. And so we built that janitorial supply company to well over $1 million. And then the floor cleaning business part of it, we were doing about $5.5-6 million at one point in annual revenue, cleaning stores from, Southwest Florida all the way over to Greeley, Colorado and up to Maine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very nice. And now the dry cleaning, I know you guys, like I said, you're our dry cleaner by choice, dry cleaning
Thank
connection.
You.
Where do you serve? You serve the Noonan-Coweta area? You serve Peachtree City?
So we our plant is in Peachtree City, and we serve from Serenby, which is South Fulton County, which is pretty close to Atlanta, all the way south to just not quite to Brooks, but almost to Brooks, which is kind of the Sonoy area. And for folks who might not know our general area, that's a if you want a frame of reference, that's where they film Walking Dead. So there you go. Serenby is a community that was built to be a sustainable type community, a very high dollar, just outside, kind of near the Atlanta airport. Mm-hmm. And then Noonan, we serve from Moreland, which is south of Noonan. And if you want a frame, look up the Amazon distribution center. And then up to North Fayetteville, which is the southern part of the airport.
Nice. Good job. Yeah, and you guys do a great job.
Thank you.
I love the fact, my wife and I, during our consulting days, we would travel Monday through Friday and just, you come home, you do laundry on the weekend, then you go back out and all the clothes, because we'd have to wear suits or at least sports coats or something like that. Having a dry cleaner that could come and pick up and then redeliver everything to us and stuff it's been phenomenal. So
thank you.
Absolutely love it. So where did you get the courage to go out on your own? I mean, you've been working since you were 11. You had the impetus you talked about before and stuff, but what gave you that courage to actually go out and say, hey, I can do this?
When I was a kid, I started out, I had it in my blood. I guess my father was a traveling salesman And I used to buy candy at, he was a manager of a Gibson's department store, which was adjacent to our apartment complex. And then across the street was a convenience store, and the street was South Cobb Drive, which was a 4-lane road. And so the kids my age weren't allowed to cross South Cobb Drive, but I did anyway. And so I'd buy some candy over there. I'd buy some candy at my dad's place and come back and sell it in the apartments. But, so I had that experience of, being able to sell stuff. And I think that, you've got to know how to sell if you want to be an entrepreneur, even if you don't end up taking the sales role. Yeah, you have to sell your ideas. You have to sell the vision and the spirit. But the courage, sometimes the courage comes from, I want to do this and I don't care what anybody says. And there's been times in my life where, it's been, I don't care what anybody says, I'm going to do this. And then there's some times where just circumstance creates the courage. Mm-hmm. And so I'll give you one of each example. When the Metro Atlanta Chamber decided I needed to be successful somewhere else, we started our dry cleaning pickup and delivery service. And it was circumstance that gave us the courage to do it. Literally, my sons had a prepaid college program in from Florida, and they agreed, and we cashed it in, and that's how we built Dry Cleaning Connection with their college money, and never reimbursed it, never went back. They've decided they want to be in the business world, so it took a lot of courage for them to do that, which emboldened us. If they were willing to bet on us, then we ought to be able to bet on ourselves. And so circumstance there. And then when I left the Noonan Coweta Chamber, we had built Dry Cleaning Connection to some extent, and it was operating nicely. My wife's the CEO. My kids are involved, and it's working just fine. But, we kind of thought, okay, if we really kind of poured some gasoline on this fire, it might take off. And so I had to quit my job in order to do that. And this is somebody... This is somebody I'm very close to. I mean, Candace and I were very close, and it was hard to make that phone call and say, I think we've had a good run, but I think we both know it's probably over. I was, more interested in what I wanted to do instead of what I was doing. And of course she probably sensed that. So, sometimes it's what you want to do, and sometimes it's circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are different types of courage that we have to tap into. Like you said, depending on the circumstances, depending on what we're involved in or what happens to us, we kind of have to find this courage. There's physical courage, of course, spiritual courage, but then you have things like intellectual courage, the ability to know that you don't know everything. There's probably better information out there. Being open to learning from people that you wouldn't normally think, sure. Especially as a boss, you have employees who have a brilliant idea, where that comes from. There's moral courage, standing up for what's right, even if it's not popular. Social courage, saying what needs to be said when it needs to be said, even if it's not the most popular thing. What type of courage do you think is most important for an entrepreneur?
In all honesty, you've mentioned so many good things, and they all kind of fit into this one bucket, and that is, integral courage. Just the integrity of, I'm going to do this with integrity. So if in fact it's social courage and something needs to be said, even if, there's going to be ramifications, my integrity says I have to do that. If I'm not giving my employees an opportunity to interject and help me help them grow the business, well, then I need to have the integrity to put my ego aside a little bit. So, I will tell you this though, it's, one of the things that I think you do this, it's so important to hear outside of your bubble what ideas. And one of the great things about the chamber business for me, and one of the things I wrote in a Million Dollar Meetings, is that, when you meet somebody outside your bubble who has an idea and you go, wait a second, I could take that, put it here. And so, and this is the shameless plug for a coach, but a coach who has the opportunity to meet lots of different people and then say, hey, you might try this. I learned it from so-and-so, and knows, it's really kind of powerful. So, yeah. But integrity, that's my deal.
Integrity. No, I think that's good. And you're right. It incorporates a lot of those things, because so many business owners, they think, hey, this is the way I've always done it.
Right.
This is the way I was trained. So this is the only way to do things. I think they limit themselves.
Yeah.
Have you learned from your employees?
Oh, goodness. Sometimes you learn from your employees the way you don't want to, right? but yeah, we've learned a lot from our employees. I'll give a good example. We hired a young lady not long ago, and everybody that comes into the plant, the first place you go is the shirt machine. And I know I alluded to the shirt machine, but about 55% of the business that comes into a dry cleaners is men's dress shirts.
Sure.
And so everybody has to know how to do that, because on any given day, that may be everything that there is to do. And so my son is probably the best on the shirt machine. I was, he's better, I'll admit it. And both of us looked up one day, and we kind of looked at the percentage of touch-ups that are necessary by this young lady doing the work. And it's like, well, I don't know what she's doing, but we've got to find out. You know, and so we've literally interviewed her, watched her, videoed her, trying to figure out what is she doing differently than we're doing. And we'll do those kind of things. But sometimes you learn that you're expecting people to be capable of things they're not capable of. Sure. And so you have to also learn how to bring them along, you know, and it's frustrating sometimes because it's easy for us, right? You know, I know exactly how it's supposed to work. Why don't you get this? I told you. And you have to learn how to communicate a different way with people sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about having the right person in the right seat, right?
Yeah.
So if they're not good at this, let's find out what we can use them for. Get them out there. Is there a certain type of courage you think that comes easier for you?
I hate it, but it is true. And that is, you know, I'm really good in a crisis.
Okay.
And so I have to be careful not to run around creating crises. I had this friend up in at the Metro Atlanta Chamber who taught me the term firefighting arsonist. I've always appreciated that. You know, I'm really, you know, like for example, when COVID hit, you know, I was pretty good through that crisis. Yeah. I was really good building the plant. We had no way to build this place, no expectation that we would ever be able to do it. And just every day when somebody would say, how in the world are we going to do this? I'd literally would look at people and say, I don't know. I just know we are. Nice. I don't know. I just know we are. And that kind of puts you in a position where you know, if you know you've got to, you know, you're going to. Well, then you're open to options that maybe you wouldn't have been open to before because it didn't work that way before, right? And so I'm good in a crisis.
Nice. And having a good, clear vision you can share with your team too. You get them excited about it, and they'll find ways to help.
Sure, absolutely. So
how did COVID impact you guys?
Well, it was pretty devastating to not only to us, but to our industry. And we had just gotten to the point where we had a really good team. And we had gotten to the point where we were pre-approved for a 7(a) loan that was going to consolidate all this debt that we incurred with Glenn going, I don't know, but we're going to do it, right? So, you know, you do some things that maybe aren't exactly the way you would plan on doing it and borrow money in ways you shouldn't, but, you know, we're going to get there, right? And so we were really ready for a big banner year, and then COVID hit. And for the first 4 months, we were well below 70%. I mean, I'm sorry, 30% of our normal revenue. We are down 70%.
Wow.
And so we fought our way back probably to about 60% of revenue now. But in the process, we lost a lot of folks. You know, people were scared to come to work for a while and they didn't come to work. And then it was kind of like, you know what, I've kind of gotten used to not coming to work. I think I'm going to skip. And then you hire people and they don't show. And it was pretty challenging. For a while, you know, we were really lucky. We had a couple, our drivers have been with us for quite a while, and they're versatile. They know how to do everything. And my wife and, you know, very, very fortunate. It's a family business. You got four human beings instead of one. And then actually we've got a fifth because my son has a girlfriend who works in the business. So we were able to get by, but it was pretty devastating, not only to us, but to the industry. The industry predicts that probably about 40% of the cleaners in the next year and a half will be gone.
What's that percentage?
40% of the cleaners that are out there now.
Wow.
And the bad news is for them, and this is it's a sad story, but you know, most of the cleaners, if you've been to a dry cleaning plant, for the most part, they're older, the equipment's old, they're dirty, they don't keep track of information, they didn't value data. All they valued was, are you gonna pay cash? Because I can hide that. And so they didn't get any people's names or email addresses or any way to contact them. Wow. They even, a lot of times these systems were built for phone numbers. They only would bother to get the last four digits.
Yeah.
And so they don't have anything to sell, and they're at retirement age, and now COVID hits. And it's really sad for, and 50% of the cleaners in the United States are Korean owned. which is something that most people don't know. They may know intuitively, but they don't, I mean, literally Korean owned. And so it's going to be very difficult for in the coming years for the cleaning business.
Wow. So how long do you think it'll take for you guys to get back up to full speed?
We have a plan that if we can execute it the way we think we can, of course, we've never been here. So you kind of make some assumptions. The way we marketed before, we literally would put dry cleaning bags on people's doors. We found that people don't want you coming to their door right now, right? So we've created some other ideas. And obviously, networking is a big part of our plan. And there's not a whole lot of networking going on. So, but if we're able to execute what we think we're able to execute, that we believe that probably by Christmas time this year, we can be back maybe even a little bit ahead of where we were when COVID hit, which would mean that this year would be down about 28 to 30% if our numbers are right. And then next year, of course, if that's the case, then we could probably be on a projection to go where we expected to be in 2020.
Yeah. Wow. So integral courage is important. Is there a type of courage you think is maybe a little more difficult for you?
Difficult. Pause. Just want to give that a second. I want to get a little water.
Sure.
So you tell me when you're ready to start again.
Whenever you're ready. Good.
Okay. So type of courage that's difficult. I struggle letting people go. When you know you have to, it's a fault to be as loyal as I am for not only for me, but for them. You know that it's not working for them either. And yet I just struggle to have the courage to say, listen, it's time that we had a talk and it's going to be a talk about where you're going to go from here. That's probably the hardest one for me.
Yeah. And that's hard for a lot of businesses. Like you say, you know you're impacting these people's lives. You know that right. they've been around, they've worked, you like them as people. But I know so many companies that have hired somebody, realize it was a bad hire, just kind of slide them off to the side, let them continue doing whatever it is they're doing, and they hire somebody else. And that can really impact too,
Right.
Where do you find the courage then to let them go? Is it just a straight business decision or...
Really, it isn't. A lot of times for me, and I haven't had to fire many people, but I just have to convince myself that at the end of the day, they're going to be better off too. Yeah. That this isn't personal, that this isn't just for my benefit, that also my team's going to be better off. If you allow somebody to be on your team that is either an energy drainer or is a happiness drainer or is, just not getting the work done and everybody else has to participate and you don't take any action on that, eventually they begin to have symptoms of the same thing. It's a disease that kind of spreads. So you have to convince yourself that it's best for your team. It's best for that person. And, the one or two times that we've had to do it, I do rely on some resources. I speak about four or five times a year at Job Seekers here in Peachtree City. Nice. I always suggest somebody go there. Then there's, depending upon their skill level, I've got some friends at Goodwill that, have a pretty good system over there too.
Nice. And so what's next for Dry Cleaning Connection? Are you guys looking to expand your operations?
We're constantly looking at plants or stores that are closing, trying to see if there's an opportunity that will fit our model and fit with us. We're not like most cleaners, so it's kind of hard to find a good fit, but we're always looking for somebody to purchase. We are delving a little bit into supply. We've got this soap that comes in sheets instead of in a big jug and kind of fits our model of being environmentally friendly. And we're going to start to market that a little bit. We toyed with other things you can deliver. We toyed with coffee. We toyed with delivering wine. But we found out we had to have a different license for that. So that didn't work. But, we're open to some different ideas. But I think for us, right now, more than anything, is we're trying to tighten our ship to where we can be replicatable, to where we can go out and say, okay, maybe we can buy this place. They don't fit our model, but we have a system for that to fix that and make it worth the investment, because there's going to be a lot of opportunity coming up. We did open a store in Noonan that I forgot to mention that opened. We signed the lease January 28th or something like that in 2020. We finally got our certificate of occupancy on March 30th. So and then shortly after that, there was an unfortunate situation with the landlord where we had a couple of Black Lives Matter protests outside our building, not our facility, but our building. And we just kind of thought, you know, maybe it's time just for us to take advantage of that month-to-month lease and step away.
Wow.
It was a beautiful store. Hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now, so the brick and mortar store, you would actually take clothes in at that point, bring them to your facility there in Peachtree City, and
yes,
then return back.
So that was the thought. The natural thought for once you have a plant is that you have small stores and you do pickup and delivery. We need to do a better job within the neighborhoods we're in. We don't have the kind of penetration rate in the neighborhoods that we're in, with the exception of a couple. We do really, really well in Serenbe. We've done a good job marketing up there. We've done a good job. Our system works up there. And in our, you know, we believe that if it's built to show, it's built to grow. And so when you hang you got all these homes that are real close together and you hang clothes on people's doors in a big green bag, it's kind of obvious and people sign up. So we're going to do more of that. We're going to do a better job of marketing within our neighborhoods. But we'd be open to purchasing a store or two if it was the right place.
Yeah. Nice. And then percentage wise, are you mainly consumer residential business or business?
Right now, our position is we're about 1% walk-in. We do have some folks who walk into our plant here in Peachtree City. We're about 20% commercial. We have a pretty good stake in the medical market in the Southern Crescent and we do lawyers and we do accountants and we do car dealerships. So we've got a little bit of that, but the rest is at homes.
Yeah, homes. So not a lot of the restaurants around the area?
No, we don't do anything with restaurants we've really haven't gone down that market. It's something that we've talked about. We do have, and fortunately it's starting to come back, but we do have the Noonan Center, and we do their linens for their events. Nice. And we do all of those, and they were our largest customer. This is the interesting thing. Sadly, this give you an example of how much things are down. Our number one customer during 2019 was Noonan Center. It was in 2020 as well, and they didn't have very many events.
Wow.
So, but you know, the volume for everybody went way down.
Sure. Yeah. With us not traveling,
right,
we didn't have a lot of clothes to put out there.
Yeah. So, no events, no traveling, not going out to dinner as much. It all impacts.
And on Zoom, you only have to be dressed from the waist up, right?
So that's true. That's true.
Cuts down on cleaning.
Although I will say that there's some studies that say if you dress for the whole amount for a Zoom, you'll do better. I'm just saying, I've heard that.
Okay. I'll note to myself. Yes. Get fully dressed for Zoom meetings. Awesome. So Glenn, if people want to get in touch with you, where can they find your guys' website?
Okay. It's drycleaningconnection.com. All one word, no S. For some reason, people like to make it Dry Cleaning Connections, but it's just connection.com. And you can reach me at glenn@drycleaningconnection.com.
Good. And do you still do speaking engagements?
Right? I do. My speaker page is Speaker Glenn Gould on Facebook, and it's one N in Glenn.
Speaker. Got it. Perfect. And I will have all these links down in the show notes for everybody. Glenn, this has been awesome. Very cool.
I've enjoyed it very much, Harlan. Yeah. I appreciate it.
No, I'm glad you were able to get on with us and stuff like that. And we'll check back in with you when you open up that next big facility, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good stuff. All right. Well, hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure you share it with your family, friends, colleagues, and check in again, because there's always more happening. And that's it for me, Coach Harlan, saying so long for now.